The expeditionary force headed out the next morning after stocking up on supplies, courtesy of the floorwalkers. Perkins had stayed up through the night questioning them about their society. After several hours, the mist dissipated, and they found themselves back on one of the many almost dead plains that seemed to fill the midsection of the country. Soon, they began passing ruins of tower-like structures. Spires 40 feet tall, twisted red metal, arches in doorways, entrances twice the height of any human.
Wow. Ever see anything like them, Rock?
No. But they seem functional somehow. Perhaps astronomical tools or timekeepers using the sun. Like the druids of old?
Yeah, it could be. There's something strange about them, though I can't quite put my finger on it.
They passed more of the slightly tilted metal towers every 9.5 miles, all pointing directly northwest, the tops of the towers just visible to one another. Perkins got Roxon to agree to a rest stop next to one of the structures, and quickly shot up the ladder, snapping shots of everything with his camera. He reached the top, a kind of oval room, and yelled down from one of the 10 large windows evenly spaced around the egg-shaped chamber.
Just metal, but I can see back and forwards, just the tops of the towers. With mirrors, you could easily signal messages.
Are there any tools or instruments up there?
No, nothing. I don't even see any seams or rivets. It's like this whole thing is one piece.
Well, take notes and we'll review it later. Come on, we're almost there.
They headed slowly forward, keeping a steady pace that the Brids could keep up indefinitely, provided they had daily sustenance. Hybrids were extremely versatile, one of their major strong points being the ability to eat almost everything and anything, which they were always trying to do. As the sun crept beneath the horizon, the sky turned green, then ochre. The northern lights came on like a kaleidoscopic light show of the skies, flashing, splashing, dancing across the ever-darkening sky.
That's just goddamn gorgeous, if I do say so.
We sure don't get this back at CC.
Yeah, it's just... Wait, do you hear something?
Shit, it's a...
Drone!
The drone had detected their presence. The robot rocket plane emitted white, thick smoke as it accelerated in their direction, its built-in scanners already transmitting information 1,000 miles back. It was a ramjet model, equipped for long, long journeys, sweeping back and forth across America, searching for clandestine activities. And this time, it had hit pay dirt. It soared in closer, gyros coming into play, setting the spy drone into a slow roll to keep it stable at its slowing speed as its cameras tried to focus on the unusual presence below. Somewhere in Petrov City or New Lenin or Denver, some bored console watcher was growing excited. He had found something. He would get a medal.
Everybody ready? Fire!
Shit! How are we supposed to take it out? It's got 2-inch thick arms!
It was built by the Reds. Well, there's a weak point somewhere. We'll find it.
Archer dismounted calmly from his horse, not really noticed by the free fighters as they continued to fire. He took out a short arrow from his quiver with a small explosive device glued to the front and a spiral-shaped feather on the tail. Moving carefully, he placed the arrow in the groove of his crossbow and pulled a lever that caught behind the bow's thick wire and stretched it back. Archer lay down on his back as the red drone flew slowly lower, circling in a 500-foot orbit around the expeditionary force. He rested the crossbow atop his knees and got the orbit of the screaming drone in his sights. He watched the drone as it went around once, twice. He estimated the arrow's time to striking. The metal shaft shot toward an emptiness in the sky that was suddenly filled by the 10-foot-long, 4,500-pound spy drone. The explosive nearly tore through the entire cone. The drone seemed to hesitate for a second, as if surprised. Then it lurched wildly, its control mechanisms shattered by the blast. It spun end over end, completely out of control.
Everybody out of the way!
Ah! Ah!
Lang!
Lang scrambled away like a fish out of water as the pool of liquid oxygen spread rapidly out in all directions for 25 feet. Rock ran over to Lang, who kept just ahead of the advancing wall of fire. He was almost free.
Lang!
Rock? Rock, wake up!
Are you okay?
Lang. Where's Lang?
He's still out. You got hit pretty hard, Rock. You sure you're okay?
Yeah, just a headache.
Archer came over and looked downcast. His shot, which had seemed so remarkable just moments before, suddenly seemed like a mistake.
Relax, Archer. You did the right thing. It was an accident. Anyway, he's gonna live, right?
Yeah, it's looking like he just got some bad burns. Second degree around his upper thigh. I guess some of the burning fuel hit him. Lang? Lang, can you hear me? Say something.
Damn, that hurt.
You're gonna be all right, kid. Just relax, breathe deep, and keep your energy going. The worst thing you can do now is go into shock.
Keep control. Your leg will heal. The pain is just a meditation.
Slade quickly opened the med kit and cleaned the edges of the burn, rubbing the antibiotic cream over the upper leg. Lang gritted his teeth from time to time, but seemed to be dealing with it with Rock's mantra. Slade sprayed the sealant over the burn, then pulled out a disposable hypo with 20 grains of morphine.
There we go. Should be good as new in a few days. We can hold off infection with some of Dr. Schechter's medicines.
Hey. Nah, it feels just fine.
Yeah, I'll give you a smaller dose next time.
Can he ride?
He should be able to. He'll just have to keep the wound from rubbing against anything. Should be raised up. If you could rig up some sort of contraption...
Rock quickly made a rigging using tent poles and rope, and they hooked up a kind of raised sling device, which kept Lang's right leg in the air. He was twisted around in his saddle backwards, but using a frame from a backpack, they managed to rig up a metal and canvas backrest. The entire structure looked somewhat odd, but it functioned. The free fighters headed out slowly, single file, Detroit holding tightly onto the reins of Lang's new Brid, which plodded along lazily behind him.
Ship!
What?
The stupid transmission went out again. I just saw something, but I'm not sure. Let me play it back.
There. Play back there. That dim line of... Are those animals?
I can't tell. It's so dark. Here, the drone circling in.
Wait, pause. Right there. Those flashes. Play back slowly. Those are gunshots.
And this is when the video fails. It just spins like that and then blanks out.
They actually managed to shoot down the heavy drone Soyuz 2.
We have to inform command. Command! There's definite rebel activity far deeper than anything we picked up before. The coordinates? Let's see, I'm sending them to you right now. They were moving in a northwesterly direction.
The free fighters charged ahead through the night. Rock had to assume that the images had been transmitted before Archer shot it down. Lang, looking bleary-eyed, but out of the numbing pain of the first few hours, seemed to be handling his burns well. The land remained flat and dead for miles. The area had been saturated with red missiles to take out the huge U.S. MX system, a network of highways through three western states, with trucks carrying the missiles, patrolling at least 20 miles apart. Now, 100 years after the bombs fell, nothing grew or lived. Roxon couldn't get rid of the feeling that something was wrong. The sky was a sick indigo. Precognition, they might call it. Something about the sky. He searched the indigo, laced with small, green strontium clouds that floated overhead like dead lilies in a swamp. His senses went on full alert as his heartbeat quickened, preparing for danger. They had gone about a mile further on the never-changing flat terrain when Rock heard it.
Shit.
You hear it too?
I do, Chen. They found us.
Within a minute, they could see the big Soyuz 2 transport craft. The huge loading doors of the plane opened up from the front, and figures leaped out. As they hit the air, parakites popped open from above them, and they streamed down, dozens of black shirts from one of the elite Special Forces team. Figure after figure jumped from the slowly moving jet until the sky seemed to be filled with the quickly falling parakites.
Let's move it! Yeah!
They tore across the plain, the hybrids quickly picking up to a good speed, as there were virtually no obstacles to watch for. But the parakite force easily kept up. Their curving orbits brought them ahead of the Americans. They were going to be cut off. Rock could see that. It would be better to be in a good position defensively than to be picked off the hybrids' backs. Roxon held up his hand.
Let's fight it out, men. We're not going to be able to outrun them, so let's get our defenses as strong as possible.
They quickly dismounted and broke down into their defense squads.
Lang, Erickson, set up the machine gun. Berger, Perkins, set the mortar range, 150 feet. Everybody else, get ready to pick them off.
Detroit took out 10 grenades and laid them carefully down in front of him. 5 concussion and 5 frags. Each man did his job calmly and swiftly. The Reds circled ever lower, nearly 40 of them in black leather gear, oxygen masks, and goggles to keep out the dreaded radioactive air and soil.
They're not waiting around, are they?
Nope. Let's get them, men. Watch your back, they're swinging around. Shit! One down!
But the black-shirt parakite squad made for extremely difficult targets. Archer aimed carefully. But the first black-shirt had landed. They quickly set up their assault team equipment, light machine guns, a bazooka-type rocket launcher, and other sundry Soviet field weaponry. Not waiting for the rest of their comrades to land, they opened fire.
Tearing the bridge apart!
So give it right back! Erickson, Lang, take the machine gun!
With the machine gun resting securely on one of the dead bridge haunches, Erickson opened fire. If the Americans had hardly any cover, the Reds had none. The stream of death swept through the machine gun nest, tearing it apart with the force of a whirlwind. The machine gun exploded in the chamber, blowing apart and into a black shirt.
Weird out!
Take cover! He's flanking us! Good shot, Detroit!
Couldn't get a bead on the other one.
Archer! Take the shot, Archer!
The arrow flew from the defensive circle and, spinning ever so slightly, slammed into the other Red's buttocks at 300 miles an hour. The surviving Reds set up their lines of fire. Within 2 minutes, all 36 men were organized into strike teams. Roxon surveyed the scene. It was apparent what their plan was. One team was advancing slowly, crawling on their bellies, laying cover fire, while the other two worked their way around to either flank. They would soon have the Americans cut off on 3 sides, and then they'd close in. He glanced around at his own men inside the defensive circle of hybrids. 3 of the bridge were already dead, on the edge of the circle facing the guns, their bodies riddled with bullets. But the thick hides and 4-foot width of the creatures made them good cover. He hoped no more would have to die.
Anyone hurt?
I'm winged, Rock. I guess it's only appropriate that the doctor on this expedition gets a dose of the real thing. I'll live.
All right, men. There's no way to outflank them from this position. You'll have to outflank them. Detroit, Chen, I want you both to go straight back, away from the Reds. And then circle around them, coming in from behind. You'll have to be at least 300 or 400 yards away from them or you'll be spotted. Detroit, you've got your grenades. Chen, how many do you want?
I've got something new I've been working on for the last few months with Dr. Schechter's help. Here, Rock, I haven't shown you these as I wanted to wait for the right moment to use them.
The Chinese martial arts master pulled out 2 5-pointed star knives. The blades were round in the center with 5 razor-sharp points coming out like a starfish.
Made them myself, well, with Schechter's help. They're lined with explosives, Rock. High explosives. Go off on contact with the explosive force of about half of one of our standard grenades. I've been working with them. They're quite efficient. I've got 10 of them in the back of my belt.
What happens if you fall when you're wearing them?
I don't fall.
Right. I'm glad I'm not a Russian today. Good luck to both of you.
Detroit and Chen headed out from the back of the defensive circle of Brids, jumping quickly over the backs of the animals and running as fast as their pumping legs could carry them in a line straight away from the advancing Red forces. They went about 200 yards and stopped.
Take it slow. I'll take it fast if you don't mind.
They headed off in opposite directions, moving like blurs, sprinting as hard as they could. They circled far around the action, watching the Reds send out curtains of flesh-seeking slugs. The sounds of battle pushed the two Americans on, faster and faster, as they raced against time to save their fellow warriors.
Shit! They're using rockets. Erickson, is your gun reloaded?
Yeah!
Cut off the flanks with a steady line of fire right along that slight rise there.
Will do, Rock.
Perkins and McCoughlin got the mortar going, slowly zeroing in on the Red squad directly ahead of them, less than 200 feet away.
All right. A few more like that, and it's time for dinner.
But the Reds had gotten their own bigger stuff going as well. A black shirt jumped up from the left flanking group, the legs of his leather uniform covered with blood from some already wounded comrade. He aimed a long, tubular weapon at the Free Fighters.
Jump!
Shrapnel from the scrapped mortar had torn into Perkins' back and McCoughlin's legs. They both checked out the wounds. They'd live. The mortar gone, they raised their liberators and began firing on auto at the constantly advancing lines of black leather uniformed troops. As if on signal, three Reds suddenly jumped up, one from each of the three advancing squads, and pulled their arms back, obviously to throw grenades.
There!
All three of the death squad fell dead, but not before one managed to throw his grenade. It spun gracefully through the air like a well-thrown football and plopped in the dirt dead center of the Free Fighters' circle. Lang leapt forward without a moment's hesitation and grabbed the grenade. Lang rolled back over to Erickson as if nothing had happened.
Hey man, keep firing! We still got at least 2 dozen to go!
Erickson stared in amazement at Lang, who put his burnt leg back up on the pack and, smiling, resumed feeding the belt of 9mm slugs into the machine gun. Like hornets, the bullets tore into 10 Red troops rushing for them. The very air turned red with the spray of hot blood shooting out from countless holes in the jerking, screaming bodies. When the smoke cleared, nothing moved in that direction. The other side of the perimeter was not doing as well.
McCoughlin! I can't breathe!
Rock ran the 10 feet separating him from the gasping Perkins and sat him upright. He looked at the hole. It had gone cleanly through, puncturing the lung but not the heart. He had to stop the bleeding.
Perkins, listen to me. You'll live, I promise you. But you've got to stay absolutely still and keep your hand over the wound. Understand me? If you calm down, you'll be able to breathe. Even if just through one lung.
I understand.
You all right, McCoughlin?
Buzz off, Rock. It's just a flesh wound.
Roxon looked around the inside of the defensive circle. Almost everyone had been hit in some way. Their fire was somehow grinding down. The Reds had at least half their force left and were continuing a steady barrage of fire that would lay waste their small circle of hybrids if it kept up much longer. Detroit and Chen had made their full circles, sweeping deep behind the Russian lines. Now they came forward toward the backs of the firing Reds. Detroit pulled out 2 grenades and aimed at 2 groups of Reds in the center squad. The grenades were short-fused, so the Reds couldn't throw them back. A group turned to fire, but Detroit had already dove to the ground. The Reds couldn't even see where the frags had come from. Detroit pulled 2 more pins, heaving the grenades. They fell into the largest group of the central Red squad, 6 black-suited men firing as they crawled forward. The first one took a Red shoulder clear apart, severing the arm, which flopped down onto the ground, trailing a spume of red. The second grenade did more damage, sending out a blast of razor-sharp shrapnel that tore into the Soviet troops' spinal cords and backs. Two more twitched silently, their hearts ripped apart by metal splinters coming in through their backs. The sixth black shirt continued to fire, in shock from the sight of his blasted comrades. 200 feet to the left flanking squad, the least damaged of the three red units, moved in for the kill. They could see that the Americans behind the circle of mutant horses were weakening. Now was the time. They rose and began forward. Two of the black shirts fell to the ground, half their backs blown away. The red squad of 12 turned to find their attacker. A Chinese man ran crouched over, holding small, glinting metal stars. One snapped into a black shirt throat. The head twisted off and landed in a heap 10 feet away. The second slammed into a Russian stomach, blasting a hole clear through to the other side. The red officer behind the man could see daylight through the opening until a geyser of blood filled the space. They tried to get a bead on the running man, who would go 20 or 30 feet, stop for the merest instant, throw two of the weapons, and then take off again. Chen continued his ravaging of the Russian squad. He reached behind him and flung the star knives, snapping his wrist back at the last second to spin them into the proper trajectory. His hundreds of hours practicing in the woods around Century City hadn't been in vain. It was the Reds who were caught in a crossfire now. Detroit rushed over to Chen. They dove to the dirt as the last of eight black shirts rose as a unit.
How many do you have left?
Two.
Me too. On three. One, two, three! Think that's all of them?
Let me see. Yeah. That's quite a mess we've made.
Detroit and Chen walked slowly back to their fellow warriors some hundred yards away in the circle of hybrids. They had to step over Russian bodies everywhere. Bodies without heads, arms, and legs. Bodies with gaping holes in them, as if they had been drilled through with jackhammers. Pools of blood gathered, and were lapped up by the ground like rain. Something would grow from the nourishment. Something would arise from out of all this death. They reached the circle and jumped over the four dead hybrids who had given the life-saving cover to the Americans. Rock and the other men were tending to their own wounds. Almost everyone had been hit somewhere. They had won the battle, but it had been costly. Slade, McCoughlin, and even Rock had been hit. His face was smeared with blood from a bullet that had gouged a neat little path along his cheek. But it was Perkins who had been most severely injured, his lung punctured. The free fighter sat propped up against the back of a hybrid. The men cleaned up the mess, letting the hybrids rise. Slade worked on Perkins, closing the wound and sealing it. The problem was what the hell to do about the puncture. Sometimes they healed themselves, sometimes not. In 2 hours, they had gotten the brids reloaded and tended to their wounds. Perkins, still looking very shaky, mounted, grimacing from the pain of the motion, and the free fighters left the slaughterhouse behind them. They headed off deeper into the vast, flat wasteland of the West as buzzards began circling overhead in larger and larger numbers. They were going to feast tonight.